had it, and you may proceed when you're ready.
Your Honor.
May it please the court again.
We try to narrow this down, this argument.
Can I narrow it any further?
Setting aside the void for vagueness argument, your argument is simply that your client had to have had two prior convictions at the time of the underlying offense.
That's my argument. Yes.
That's your argument.
Yes, it's statutory interpretation.
Okay, statutory interpretation. What in the statute leads you to conclude that that's the case here when it's contrasted with, for example, 18.2248C and 18.2270, where the legislature specifically said?
Oh, it is contrary to 270. It's the difference between the definition of conviction, offense, and charge. So it's 18.2270 refers to offenses. 18.2248 refers to, I believe, charges, and then this one refers to convictions.
Breaking it down to the simplest terms, the bottom line is 18.2248 presupposes a prior conviction prior to being charged under the statute for a subsequent offense.
Correct.
This particular statute does not require that.
Correct.
So why could we not decide, the legislature, for whatever reason, decided that it wasn't going to make the actual conviction of another offense a predicate for being able to go forward with a subsequent offense? If the legislature wanted to do that, why didn't?
I wish they had. It would have been clearer, but they did not. But it is not exactly as the language, although similar, is not exactly the same as the 248 language, nor is it the same as the 270 language or the 46.2.357.
Why is there a constitutional infirmity then, just because the legislature chose not to adopt the same prosecutorial approach in 18.248 as they did in this?
I'm sorry, the constitutional infirmity?
And what
because we do not know if, as applied, they could choose, a prosecutor could choose to prosecute a fact pattern as a felony or a misdemeanor on a person who commits multiple larcenies, as they have in this point.
A prosecutor could, in this context, choose to prosecute this as a misdemeanor if the prosecutor chose to.
And as I think it was in the, I think it was stated in the petition for appeal, or at least maybe in the appendix somewhere, it had started off as a misdemeanor and been null pros and direct indicted as the felony.
Prosecutorial discretion is all about. I know
and that's why,
as a defense attorney, several times I'd have a person who was exposed to a felony, but for whatever reason, the prosecution decided that they were going to prosecute on a misdemeanor.
Oh, yes.
Whether it was through negotiation or,
oh, yes,
or whatever. But in this case, the prosecutor exercised the discretion to prosecute for the greater charge.
And I would argue that they shouldn't have had this discretion because it changed the nature of the charge beyond what was allowed or intended in the statute. Because that's why I'd filed the motion in limine, the motion to dismiss, because in this case, it changed the nature, and I don't think that that is what the legislature intended from the statutory construction.
It changed the nature of the offense. It changed the exposure for purposes of qualification of the offense.
Yes. I think that was how the Judge McCallum had ruled. I argue, though, that that is not what the legislature had intended. I argue that the legislature was not as clear as they should have been. But they did not intend to make a third offense. If it's third offense, I think that there is the distinction, and then there is the distinction with differences, but the distinction between offenses committed, which is how the legislature had created and how the Court of Appeals had decided for purposes of the driving under the influence charge, versus the ones where there are prior convictions necessary, such as the driving suspended or the habitual offender charges. So
the legislature in those statutes made the conviction a predicate for being able to go forward with a greater charge.
They did not make it a predicate. In for driving under the influence, it is not a predicate. It is
248.
You're talking about 248. In 248, they did. They made it a predicate. In 270, it is not a predicate because they were referring to offenses. Here is the conviction. At the time of conviction, as the Judge McCallum had said, or is it at the time of the offense, as we argue? Your Honor, it is pure statutory construction. I argue, and I do maintain that it's not clear, and if it's not clear, tie goes to us. But because a penal statute should not necessarily be extended.
But your argument is one that talks about void for vagueness.
That was the constitutional argument.
And whenever we typically look at a void for vagueness analysis, and I appreciate where you're coming from on this, isn't it our responsibility to give the statute a reasonable interpretation where it could be considered constitutional?
If you do, what I'm arguing or asking you to consider is that it is not, the statute is not clear. And if the statute is not clear, because I think that there is questions about conviction, whether the conviction refers to time of offense versus conviction refers to time of sentencing. So given that there is question about that, then it is vague. And if it is vague, a penal statute should be construed strictly against the common law. So that's the essence of the argument, Your Honor. It's a two-page, with all the other things, but the argument itself is two pages. I'm trying to limit it also. But that's where it is, sir. I'll defer and respond to him.
All right. You have the remainder of your time for 8 minutes rebuttal. Mr.
Stout. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Craig Stout on behalf of the Commonwealth. I would suggest to the Court that this statute is clear. It makes it, if you are convicted of a larceny and the Commonwealth alleges and proves at trial that you have at least two previous convictions for larceny, either misdemeanor or felony, that makes your third crime a felony. It can be punished as a Class 6 felony, which is 0 days up to 5 years in jail.
I think, as I understand your colleague's argument, though, is that it's sort of a notice type argument. In other words, if you have a person who is engaging in theft behavior and they do not have a prior conviction, which would thereby provide an enhanced punishment, which is basically what the statute is, it's an enhanced punishment statute, that they're really not on notice that a conviction that they get after the fact could basically be taken back and used to latch on to enhance the exposure that they have on the greater offense. That's where your notice problem in their view comes from.
I mean, I don't think the notice has to be quite that specific. I think it's clear that a layperson or obviously any lawyer looking at this can realize that once you get up to 3, 4, 5 petty larcenies, you're looking at some type of enhanced punishment, either just from the judge saying, okay, this is your fourth or fifth, I'm going to give you the maximum of 12 months, or as this code says, you can be exposed up to 5 years for the Class 6 felony. I don't think the notice requirement has to be specifically, okay, this is the specific charge that will definitely lead to you being eligible for the Class 6 felony punishment. It just has to be enough notice that once you get a recidivism issue, that you have the possibility of being exposed to enhanced punishment, which is what this statute does, and it clearly does that. I think any fair reading of the statute, it's clearly a sentencing statute. It's not strictly a penal. It doesn't define a new crime. It just says once you get two or more prior convictions for larceny, when you get convicted of the third or subsequent, it's now a Class 6 felony for purposes of punishment.
From an analytical perspective, explain to me, and again, legislature can do whatever it wants to do, but why did the legislature, in the context of a similar type situation, which is, in my view, even more serious if you're dealing with drunk drivers, basically say that you have to have that conviction before you can have the enhanced?
I think the cases that dealt with this, Thomas and Williams, both talked about the conduct in a DUI or felony HO is such that it's necessary to punish the people for subsequent behavior, even if they haven't actually been convicted yet, because it is so inherently dangerous, especially DUIs. It's one of those things where people on the road driving repeatedly are such a danger to society that it's necessary to punish them with enhanced punishment, even if they've not yet been convicted of previous conduct that's been charged. It's the conduct and behavior which enhances the punishment, not necessarily the convictions, and that's to get the people off the streets. That's, I think, the rationale for that. Same thing with the felony habitual offender statute. If the driving is so dangerous that they're now a habitual offender, The purpose of the statute is to protect society by getting them off the street with enhanced punishments, even if they've not yet been convicted of the prior offenses.
Why wouldn't that same sort of analysis apply to your drug circumstance?
Well, I think the difference with the drug charges is a lot of times in drug surveillance cases, you're going to have multiple instances of controlled buys, controlled purchases, and that type of thing. And the police may not arrest you until the fourth or fifth controlled buy. See, it could be a situation where there's basically the police have surveilled you for a week. They have five different charges of distribution. And that if they didn't have the statute, you could be charged with your first, second, third, all basically for one police surveillance. So in that case, it's a situation, in my opinion, and I'm not sure exactly how this plays out, but I think the way the cases say is that we did, the courts did not want the police to have the choice of deciding, okay, we'll just wait till there's five or six, charge it, and now we're going to get life for the third one. You have to have a conviction.
Why would the same analysis apply in a theft case? In other words,
well, see, here we're
person
kind of
is like going into Kmart or Walmart or wherever they go, and the police says, okay, this person is a person that we think is a serial thief, and so we're going to keep an eye on this person. And so they go into Walmart, and they steal two or three items, and then they go to Joseph A. Banks, which you get three suits for $99. But you go there and you steal three suits and they don't charge. And then you go to another store and you steal something and you don't get charged. And then all of a sudden they take them all and bring them all at the same time. And based upon the Commonwealth's theory, you can get an enhanced exposure there because the police waited. Why is it the same?
Well, I think your scenario might be a little bit different. And also I'd say this conception falls in between those two extremes because you still need to have convictions prior to the trial on the current charge. So you have to wait for at least there to be two previous convictions. It doesn't matter the offense dates, but before trial and the underlying charge, there has to be two convictions. So just waiting to bring them all at the same time, we're not going to have enhanced punishment because you're not going to have two previous instances or convictions.
So your argument is that in the hypothetical Judge Alsop just gave you, that they would not be counted because the court, or the police had waited to make arrests. Is that right?
Right.
Well, if this serial thief is going to, we want to see.
If you have five instances of petty larceny over various offense dates, and for whatever reason the police and Commonwealth bring them all at the same time, the Commonwealth would still have to prove two previous convictions of larceny in order to get the enhanced punishment. And you don't think you can prove previous convictions by bringing them all at the same time. That's different than the use of a firearm or something like that, where one instance of using it five times, you get first offense 3 years and 5 years, 5 years. You don't need separate convictions for that. Here you actually need previous convictions. That's what the statute requires, two previous convictions, not just two previous acts of conduct, which is what the DUI and the felony HO only requires. So whereas for felony HO or felony DUI, if the guy's driving five times and DUI, and you bring all those at the same time, you can get the enhanced punishment because it's just based on conduct. Here you need convictions. Now, under your scenario, if you've got two previous convictions and then you wait to bring five of them, all five of those could be subject to enhanced punishment because you've got the two previous larceny convictions.
So you're arguing that there was notice even with regard to the convictions when she decided to plead guilty here?
I think she clearly had notice that she was subject to conviction for larceny because that's what she did, and that's under a different statute, 18296. And here she also knew that she had pending larceny convictions. It's unclear from the record whether it was pending at the time she committed the other offense or pending before she was charged with this, but in any event, she had pending larceny charges at the same time as well. So clearly she had noticed that she was going to be convicted of a larceny. And I think clearly being this at least her third time by the time we get to this trial, that she was noticed that there's going to be some type of enhanced punishment because each time you convict a crime, the court's going to be less lenient with you, and that's just kind of common knowledge. I don't think she had to have actual knowledge that it would be a class 6 felony she was facing, but the fact that she was facing enhanced punishment. The statute's clear. It's not vague. It's written as clearly as it can be. Now, the trouble is, could it be more clearly? That's probably a problem with a lot of the statutes. But here, it's clear that once you're convicted, and you've got two previous convictions, there's going to be enhanced punishment. And that's as clear as they can make it, I think.
Isn't that what the indictment told her?
That's what the indictment said. That's what it's required to be alleged in
the indictment read to her?
And the indictment says, tracks exactly the language of the statute, that there's got to be two previous convictions that have to be proven, which when she pled guilty, she acknowledged that could be proven.
And I presume defense counsel would say, hey, here's what you're indicted for. You've been convicted before? What more notice do you need?
When I was a defense attorney, those are the conversations I had. But I think the notice is adequate. The statute's clear. There's no vagueness. It's not unclear. I think the plain language of the statute, we don't need to go too far down the canons of statutory construction to figure out what the General Assembly intended here. And for those reasons, unless the court has additional questions, I'd ask the court to affirm.
Any further questions for Mr. Salad?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Salad. Mr. Marlino, you have your 8 minutes.
Your Honor.
Well, the indictment was read to the defendant, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. At the time of the indictment, the direct indictment, she had two prior convictions. She was charged originally as a warrant, but that was
read to her.
Yes. So
didn't she have notice right then? Gee whiz, I've been convicted.
Well, yes, she had notice, but notice of what the law is at the time of the offense. Let me use Mr. Stallard's argument that sometimes with drug distribution, they have they're watching to make sure that there are two, three, how many different types of offenses of the confidential informant. But what about the case, and he referred to, Mr. Stallard referred to, of a person, oh, that's a serial thief. Let me watch, see if they go into Walmart and Joseph Banks. But in this case, as he would argue the statute, Mr. Stallard would argue the statute, they can do. I watch this person steal at Walmart. I watch the person steal at Joseph Banks. And then they are convicted of, they get charged as petty larceny of the Walmart and the Joseph Banks. And then they secure a direct indictment another month later for the third larceny that occurred. She has two prior larcenies. All may have occurred on the same day. But the police decide, yeah, you know what? And she did commit that other offense at Kohl's Target. And they can do that direct indictment.
Do the police not have the right to make that charge?
Pardon me?
Do the police not have the right to make that determination?
I don't think that they do under this, because it's a question of the definition of conviction versus offense versus charge. So it changes the nature.
Any further argument?
No. I think you know my argument.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. We appreciate your argument. The court is going to take a brief recess.